Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
We're joined first by the US economist, business advisor, and columnist with the Sunday Times, Erwin Stelzer. Erwin, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, we're going to talk about the general health and, I suppose, prognosis for the US economy, Erwin, but we might start by this week's announcement or decision by the US Federal Reserve that it doesn't see any real problem with sustained inflation of more than 2% for perhaps up to 3 years, and that interest rates won't increase from their current zero levels, perhaps till 2024 as a result. What do you think of that? And do you think the markets believe it, or do you think there will be an ongoing battle of credibility now between the markets and the Fed on this crucial issue of when inflation will return?
Well, it's sheer madness. And I think everybody knows it. I think what we're seeing is a unspoken shift in Fed policy. Remember, it only very recently decided, well, inflation above 2% is not so bad because it's been below 2% for so long. Well, that's like saying, you know, I'm running a pretty high fever today, but if you average it out with the past month, it comes fine. So don't worry. That's plain silly. And the Fed, I think, is now talking much more about full employment and income distribution, which is really when they talk about the millions who have not benefited from the rise in share prices and so on. So I think that's the underlying thing. The more immediate thing is, yes, the Fed can try to fight the market and keep interest rates wherever it wants to keep interest rates, but it can't stop inflation. Look, the Fed has tools to cope with a shortage of demand. It can goose up the demand side of the economy, just as President Biden is doing by mailing a couple of trillion dollars worth of checks to people who already are sitting on huge amounts of savings. But it can't fix the supply side of the economy. And if you look at headline, take a random headline in the Wall Street Journal, supply woes slam global manufacturing. You can't take high demand, add more demand to it when the supply side can't produce the cars and the chips and the lumber that's needed, and expect prices not to go up.
And while inflation and the worry about inflation will continue to dominate investors' concerns, as you seem to reference there, Erwin, do you think equity markets, by and large, there may be more volatility, but do you think equity markets, by and large, will be becalmed for the immediate future by the ongoing monthly sugar rush of about $120 billion of Fed bond buying programs?
Well, for a while. I mean, you can print money for a while and buy bonds for a while, and sooner or later, it will catch up to you. What they're gambling on right now is their stated belief. I don't know if it's their real belief, their stated belief, that inflation will get a hit of inflation and it will prove transient as the supply side of the economy catches up with the demand side of the economy. And there is just simply no evidence that that can happen. I mean, take the most prominent example. We're very short of chips, just as you guys are in Europe, just as the whole world is short of chips. Well, that shortage can't be transient. It takes 2 to 3 years to build a chip factory to meet that sort of shortage. The shortage of lumber for housing, it takes a little while to grow some trees. So I just think the gamble that this will happen, they're not denying it'll happen. They say, well, yeah, but it's really not a lot because it was so low before, so don't worry, and it will be transient. So the whole game is going to be whether the Fed is right in thinking that it is transient, that all those ships sitting off the West Coast and the East Coast of the United States loaded with stuff because our ports are inadequate to receive the flow of goods from Asia, whether the Fed is right that it's transient. I think they're wrong. And I think the equity markets know that, and they're all, people are assuming that they will guess when the Fed is proved wrong.
And do you think that that time could come sooner rather than later, that there could be a significant correction, if not a crash, on equity markets, and that Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed's credibility, could come under serious review?
Well, I don't try to predict equity markets. And remember, the politicians are looking right now at the elections in 2022. As long as this party goes on through the 2022 elections, they'll then turn to 2024. So if they make it through 2022 and the Democrats retain control of both houses, they'll be happy and Powell will keep his job. Whether he will get reappointed will depend very much on whether he's been right, and we'll see. I'm sort of confused because what's happened in American politics in a very, very short period of time is that anyone who believes that you can't keep printing money forever has been ridden out of politics. That would be the conservative, in the real sense of the word, faction of the Republican Party, which used to be the party of sound money, as we used to call it. There is no longer any such political force in the United States, which is another reason to expect we're going to get inflation. Now, you know, cautious economists like to say, you know, give them a number and give them a date, but never give them a number and a date. So I'm willing to give you a number. I mean, inflation is going to pick up, but I can't really, in all honesty, tell you I know when.
Well, let's turn to the politics, Erwin. I get the impression that from your reference there to Joe Biden's stimulus package, $1.9 trillion just passed by Congress last week, and what from some of the articles you've written recently, you've a pretty sardonic view of some of the objectives behind that stimulus package. That said, he's only 2 months into his administration, and he's got that package passed. It will stimulate significant economic recovery in the United States this year alone. And the vaccine program is going very well. So it looks like he's on a bit of a roll.
Well, he certainly is. Look, you got to give him this. In 50 days, which is about 50 days, half as long as it took Franklin Roosevelt to complete his 100-day reform program, he's turned the country inside out. I mean, He's riding a wave politically. He's got about a 70% of Americans approve of what he's doing. He has taken the country left. The $1.9 trillion includes anywhere, estimates vary, 10 to 25% that have anything to do with COVID. The rest is a major expansion of the welfare state, child benefit, child leave, bailing out trade unions, a huge leftish liberal wish list. That's not to condemn it. That's simply to say that he's accomplished in 50 days what the left has been unable to accomplish for years and years and years. He's kind of a combination of FDR and LBJ. And now either you're for that or you're against it. I am suspicious of it mainly because of the huge borrowing that's involved in it and the rise in the debt and the printing of the money and all the things we've gone over. But you have to hand to him, you know, to somebody who's called Sleepy Joe. Well, if he's been sleeping, his staff has been working 24 hours a day, and he has accomplished by his standards an enormous amount, and an enormous amount that is enormously popular with the American people, and that will persist into the 2022 elections.
You could argue, I suppose, and you're the economist here, Erwin, in this partnership, you could argue that if the United States gets 6.5% economic growth this year, as the Fed has now predicted, and continues that through 2022, that economic recovery alone could pay for a lot of this. And many of these measures are temporary measures.
You could argue that, and the reason they've made them temporary is, for instance, on the child benefit or the expansion of healthcare programs. They've made them temporary for two reasons. One is for budget reasons. You can't pass a budget like they have if you increase the debt, so you make something run for 2 years instead of 10. But the other is they wanted them to expire in time for them to be issues in 2022, and they're good issues for them. So, yes, they're temporary. My suspicion, I haven't seen temporary benefits like this go away in my lifetime, so I suspect they're permanent. There we are. I mean, the country has been changed dramatically. Now, remember that we also have coming down the pike a $2 trillion infrastructure program, presumably to be financed by increases in tax. And that is going to be a little more difficult thing for the president to handle. And I think at that point, we will see if that is a roadblock to his continued popularity.
Our guest here on News Talk is Erwin Stelzer, the U.S. economist, business advisor, and columnist with the Sunday Times. The problem for the Republican Party and those with a small c, as you were referencing there, true conservatives in terms of their fiscal approach to things, Erwin, is, as you say, this is hugely popular with the population in general, including many people who would be inclined to vote Republican, and that the stimulus checks, which I suppose is the most eye-catching element of the program, that Trump, President Trump, would actually have sent more in checks to American households.
Yeah, that's true, and to the extent that President Trump is a player, it confuses any attacks that Republicans running for office can make on the program. They're stuck in a hard place anyhow. And if they say, well, this is craziness, this will produce inflation, and Democrats say, well, yeah, but your guy Trump would have done even more, they're stuck. The Republicans are in disarray. I talk to responsible Republicans all the time trying to organize for 2022, and they are faced with the fact that if they don't support Trump, he's got a huge pot of money. He's going to mount primary campaigns against them. And if they do support him, they're kind of incoherent and they don't have a coherent economic message. So, even on climate change, I mean, if you're a Republican running in a suburban district, do you want to keep saying it's a hoax? Well, no. But if you don't, the president is going to mount a campaign against you in the primary. So look, the Republicans are stuck, and Biden, it seems to me, is in a very, very, very good place until inflation happens. And I think when it happens, it will be on a Jimmy Carter scale. It won't be a half a point on the 10-year. There's a lot of too much cash sloshing around for that to happen. It'll be pretty major. And at that point, I guess people will reexamine where they're coming from. And at that point, we'll know a little more about whether Trump will remain a force in the Republican Party, which now seems almost certain, or they will be able to stake out kind of the old-fashioned ground of responsible fiscal government and freer trade and the old things from which, by the way, Republican senators who support that are mostly announcing they're retiring. So it's a muddle here.
And given the speed and from our side of the Atlantic, Erwin, the seeming efficiency of the vaccine rollout program, and you were telling me before we went on air that you and your wife, thankfully, have been vaccinated yourselves. Do you think that Joe Biden could turn out to be a lucky president, that any inflationary pressures that may arise with the consequences that might have could well be beyond 2022 and the midterm elections?
Yeah, it's entirely possible. But at that point, I think you're looking not at Biden in 2024, but probably much more at Kamala Harris. And that again is a whole different story. But look, there's no question that, and I can tell you this personally, we were in pretty good circumstances during the so-called lockdown. We have offices in the house and we don't have children running around. But there was a psychological boost to the renewed sense that we could go meet similarly situated friends for dinner in a restaurant. So I can only imagine the boost for people who have really been locked in. And it's entirely possible there will be an enduring national euphoria in which Biden, and you say lucky, that's true, because the benefits from the vaccination program should really go to Trump. I mean, he had the government assume all the risk of development of these vaccines by buying them before they were proven. And there were 1 million a day being administered while Trump was still in office. So Biden got lucky. That's not a bad thing. Obama, his predecessor, was unlucky. He came into office in the midst of an international financial collapse. So, yeah, luck matters. I guess they say you'd better rather be lucky than good. I don't know about that, but being lucky certainly helps. And Biden has been lucky.
And given, as you say, that he seems to have achieved more in 50 days than many left-leaning presidents, predecessors, Democratic predecessors beforehand achieved, do you think that 70% acceptance of what he's doing signals perhaps the end of Reaganism and the welcome for small government generally across the United States in a federal sense for some time, and that a new era of big government is here, regardless of how it's paid for?
Yeah, I think the saying that's going around is the end of the era of big government has just ended. There's no question that if his luck holds and if the economy plays out the way it looks like it will, and if the redistribution proves as popular as I suspect it will, remember, there's going to be $300 per month per child going to every family, assuming that that's renewed in 2022. These are major changes. I think that the next round is going to be whether, and there's already talk this morning that the next round will be changing the structure of American government by reducing the power of the minority in Congress to prevent such things as making the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico states, which would be four more senators for Democrats. And if you see at the border, the thousands and thousands and thousands of future Democratic voters that are coming across. Just the other day, the president legalized the presence of 340,000 Venezuelan immigrants in the United States, which probably should show their gratitude to him. At the polls, when there is a amnesty, and if the left holds, there will be an amnesty. So I think that the long-run future of the American political economy, let's call it for want of a better term, is certainly far to the left of anything people envisaged when they thought of Biden as a moderate. Now, he's relatively moderate compared to the far left, but they're just waiting their time. And so I think America's been profoundly changed. But whether that's good or bad, I hesitate to say. I mean, all my friends in the conservative movement are against $15 an hour minimum wage. I'm not. I can see reasons why labor markets are not perfect and the bargaining power of individuals is on the supply side is weak. So it could. I think we are moved as far to the left now as Franklin Roosevelt moved us, and are about to be moved further to the left in terms of restructuring the basic structure of American politics.
We'll leave it there, Erwin. It'll be fascinating to see whether Lucky Joe, as he may be, will win the race against inflationary pressures, and I suppose when taxes have to go up, it'll be a fascinating thing to watch. That was US economist, business advisor, and columnist with the Sunday Times, Erwin Stelzer. Erwin, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.